Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTDHD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be exploring a really disturbing phenomenon that is becoming increasingly widespread in the world of the internet. We're talking about something which our morning show guest Carla Mantilla likes to call gender trolling. It is a particularly intense, persistent, and virulent kind of harassment and directed almost entirely against women. So it is a form of misogyny. And one of the contentions of Carla Mantilla in her intriguing book is that this is in some ways something new and newly disturbing, and on the other hand, something that has been with us for nearly all of human history. Misogyny has, that is, the hatred, dislike, or mistrust of women, prejudice against women, has been such a scourge for much of human history. So much of what we see in the world of the internet is actually very strongly based and almost eerily resembles misogynistic attitudes and practices of the past. But of course, the internet is a tool by which those attitudes and prejudices can be wielded in really, really terrible and frightening ways. She explores all this in a fascinating new book called Gender Trolling: How Misogyny Went Viral. She examines this kind of behavior. She examines the impact which it has on the women to whom it is directed. She explores some of the ways in which we are sometimes a little too quick to dismiss such actions, to not understand their seriousness. And she also offers some very well-reasoned thoughts on what we might do about this to discourage such practice now and in the future. So we have a lot to talk about. Carla Mantilla has explored these topics quite extensively in her career. She is managing editor at Feminist Studies, which is an interdisciplinary women's studies journal. She has taught at George Mason University, Gettysburg College, and McDaniel College, and the University of Maryland as well. This book is published by Prager, again called Gender Trolling: How Misogyny Went Viral. Carla Mantilla, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm really glad that we can have this conversation, although I have to say I'm sort of heartsick that this topic is before us, but of course it really is. In some respects, our conversation is especially timely, given that in the fairly recent past, a lot of attention has been given to a member of the cast of Saturday Night Live, Leslie Jones, who has been the target of especially vicious online harassment. I'm not sure if it precisely meets all the criteria that you set out for this thing called gender trolling, but at any rate, it certainly has risen the level of awareness in the general public that this exists and to what extent it is really serious. Maybe let's just start with that, since I know a lot of our listeners are acquainted with that situation, at least to some extent. Is what Leslie Jones has experienced, is that what you call gender trolling?
Yes, I would call it an incident of gender trolling, which I define as a result of a woman expressing her opinion or just having prominence on the internet. Gender trolling also is characterized by graphic, sexualized, and gender-based insults, including sending pornographic images, comments about women's genitalia, Certainly Leslie Jones had those kinds of things sent to her, including her website hacked with imagery. Most of the time, gender trolling includes rape and death threats, which are often credible. And it tends to cross platforms. So compared to regular trolling, which is also upsetting, which tends to occur like in the platform where it was initiated, so on a blog post or on a comment section, gender trolls tend to take the initiative to cross platforms. So if they find someone on Twitter, they'll go find the person's Facebook page or the person's blog or go to Instagram or Tumblr. They tend to dox the woman, which is find her real phone number, address, and post that online. So it tends to kind of proliferate among a variety of media. Gender trolling is also characterized by an intensity and frequency, so up to 500, I've heard of 500 harassing and abusive messages per day. Now, I don't know about the case of Leslie Jones yet because it's too soon, but these attacks tend to last much longer than regular trolling. So a regular trolling attack might be a few weeks or a month. For many women, it's many, many months, up to years. I've heard of women being harassed for 5 years. The other component about Leslie Jones' attack is that it is highly racist and racialized. So I would say that her attack is characterized not just by gender, but also by racism. And that is also something that happens. So gender trolls will target another aspect of a woman. For example, if she's old, they'll talk about how ugly and unattractive, and, I mean, saying it much worse than what I'm saying, of course. If she's fat, they'll target that. If she's a woman of color or of another ethnicity, they will target that as well. So there's anti-Semitism as well for women who are perceived to be Jewish. So they kind of will use anything to try to get at the woman. And what's significant about it is this sustained nature of the attack and the intensity and frequency and the fact that they're really pursuing the woman in a way, like going across, searching the internet out to find various places where she might be, and including sending her text messages, calling her phone once they are able to get that information. So it's a pretty significant thing, and I think that not a lot of people are aware that this kind of thing is happening to women, and they tend to think that it's the same as regular trolling attacks, which, you know, are not great. It's no one wants to have somebody, you know, insult them or be cruel to them on the internet. But these attacks are trolling on steroids, basically.
Right. Is this, I'm trying to remember, is this a term that you yourself have coined, or is this a term that's already out there?
I coined it because I felt that this, I saw that this was happening, and no one had a name for it. So it was like, I thought of it like many, many decades ago when sexual harassment in the workplace was happening, and there was not a name for it. Until it was named, which was by Catherine MacKinnon, it was not, although women experienced it, there was no way to talk about it or galvanize energy to fight it in any way. So I feel like it's very important to name this and to see this as very distinct from other kinds of internet attacks.
Right. We're speaking with Carla Mantilla about her book, Gender Trolling, How Misogyny Went Viral. We are going to be examining some of the worst kind of internet harassment directed towards women, as we have just been describing. We want to, for the most part, keep our focus there, of course, but I do have to say that as someone who tends to live in a very idyllic little corner of the internet and who have experienced very, very little of any of this, I found the very opening of your book actually quite enlightening, where you talk about, in a sense, run-of-the-mill trolling, which is something, in a sense, altogether different from the primary focus of your book. But I think it's worth talking a moment or two about what this really entails, that is standard trolling, or I think in your book you call it generic trolling. I think some of our listeners have probably never directly experienced even this relatively mild form of harassment and irritation on the internet. For those especially who have not, explain what generic trolling is.
Okay, generic trolling is there's a variety of tactics and strategies that trolls use. But one of the key features for generic trolling is that the people who are instigating it are doing it for what they call the lulls, L-U-L-Z, which means basically laughs. It's to them, it's funny, it's pranks. Some of them are fairly mean. Some of them are fairly innocuous, like rickrolling is one form of it, where anytime there's an online discussion, they provide a link ostensibly to some interesting article, but it's really a link to the 1987 music video by Rick Astley of the song Never Gonna Give You Up. So that's rickrolling, and it's just people do it for laughs, to make fun of others. There's also ways in which trolls will pretend that they're concerned about a topic, raising fake, you know, oh, I really care about racism, but what about this and what about that? And really, they're just jerking the person around. To them, it's funny. They don't mean it. They're not committed to what they're saying at all. They're just trying to get a rise or a reaction.
So for instance, somebody, you know, person X, whoever they may be, might go on one discussion about racism that's sort of going in a certain direction and say something quite provocative that sort of jerks it in another direction. And then they might go on another discussion of the same topic but of a different bent and post something that completely contradicts what they just posted over here.
Exactly. They have no sincerity. They are not voicing heartfelt convictions. They're just jerking people around. And for them, it's funny. There are sites where they go and recount their exploits, and it's amusing. There's other more vicious kinds. There's people who will, what's called shock trolling, where trolls post links to terribly shocking, pornographic, and offensive sites which have violent images and other profane content. And then there's RIP trolling, which is where people will go to the site or a memorial site where someone has died, and they will make fun of the person who died, make fun of the mourners. So it can get quite mean, no question about that. It can get to an extent where sometimes they will do what's called swatting, which is where trolls will call the 911 and say that there's some kind of bomb or shooting or fire or kidnapping at the home of the person that they're targeting. Those are extremely dangerous because they can result in, you know, potential shootings where the police are not aware that this is a prank. So some of these trolling events are bad, but they tend to be kind of one time or delimited in terms of scope and intensity and length of time.
Well, and it also seems that a distinction is that, as you said at the start of this description, they are doing it for their own amusement and with very little sense of the anguish that they might be creating in the person whom they are targeting. I mean, to them, it's just all fun and games, and it, at least in some cases, perhaps it never even crosses their mind that the person on the receiving end of this wouldn't be laughing as hard as they are.
No, I think they're aware that it's really upsetting to the other person, but it seems funny to them. You know, we can question what that's about. That's certainly not great. But the difference with gender trolling is that these are they're mostly men who come from the certain sections of the internet that has been dubbed the manosphere. So sections of 4chan, 8chan, Reddit, there's various other sites where they congregate. And these men are actually really angry, aggrieved, and embittered over the ways that they see certain women comporting themselves or certain opinions. So they're really taking it seriously. They're not out to trick or prank or laugh at what they're doing. They're really angry, and they're going after these women with a vengeance. It's a very different motivation.
Right. And by the way, you even when you're talking about trolling, which again can really be nasty and unpleasant, but it's not quite the same seriousness as gender trolling. You sometimes talk about IRL trolling. And this is an important facet of all of this to keep in mind, and it's certainly even a more important factor when we get to gender trolling. Explain what those three letters IRL refer to and the way in which that sometimes plays out.
So IRL is a shortened word for in real life. So it means where things are what happens on the internet doesn't stay on the internet. And that's a very important concept for people to understand. Many people suggest that when someone is trolled or gender trolled, they should simply get off the internet. For one thing, that's not possible or feasible for most people these days. Much of our lives are conducted on the internet, and many people's professions depend on their being on the internet. But for another thing, what happens on the internet does not stay on the internet. So there are instances where trolls have pursued a person in real life, where they've met the person, where they have left a letter at someone's doorstep. One of the things that has happened is when they're trying to terrorize someone, they might send food orders like a pizza delivery or from restaurants, just to kind of show that they know where that person lives. So it's a way of instilling real-life fear, especially on women, to make them feel like we're watching you. There have been men who have somehow seen a woman and then reported, "I saw you wearing a red shirt to the gym," or "I saw you buying, meat in the grocery store." So just to let them know that they know where they are and they're physically under surveillance.
And, of course, this, in really creepy ways, has echoes of the kind of misogynistic acts that have been going on for a long, long time, and makes all of this all the more sinister.
Yes, it's very similar to stalking. I think stalking is an example that has a lot of parallels with gender trolling, because many decades ago, stalking was not defined as a term, and yet women were stalked, and there was no way for them to talk about it. So when they would go to the police, I actually remember an incident in college where a woman was being stalked by her ex-boyfriend, and he was knocking and pounding on the door, which was locked, and she called the police, and they said they can't do anything till he gets in. So there was no sense that a crime could happen or this could be something significant until we gave it a name, stalking, and then we trained police to take it seriously. I think gender trolling is very similar in that there's a sense, certainly among law enforcement, from the women who've contacted law enforcement to try to get help, that law enforcement does not take it seriously, feels that it's just the internet, doesn't understand how this happens, and does not take it seriously and does not think that it could result in actual danger to women.
Hmm. Before we start talking about gender trolling, I want you to clarify something that you referred to in passing about how a lot of trolls, men who do this kind of trolling, and I presume also men who engage in the more serious practice of gender trolling, congregate on the internet in certain places. And you mentioned a couple places that I don't know anything about, and I suspect most of our listeners don't know anything about that as well. What kind of gathering places are we talking about on the internet, and what kinds of things are discussed there? Or, what is even the purpose of such cyber gathering of trolls?
Well, people gather on the internet in all kinds of places. So there are many forums, and there are very popular forums such as Reddit, which is highly popular. It's been called the front page of the internet. But there are certain sections or segments of Reddit where gender trolls will talk to each other, foment each other. There's also 4chan, which was a very prominent one until there was an incident where Gamergate was one of the biggest gender trolling incidents, where three women, among many others, were virulently attacked. All three of them had to leave their homes due to the very credible rape and death threats that they received. But that took place on 4chan, and when the person who ran 4chan, I can't remember his name at the moment, found out about it, he actually booted all those threads off of 4chan, and then they moved to a place called 8chan. So I'm sure that since I've written the book, there's other places that have cropped up. These forums tend to come and go and have different kinds of attendance. But yes, it's where, like any group of people who talks about, there might be a forum on how to breastfeed or how to, gardening forums. Well, there are forums where men kind of talk to each other and say how aggrieved they are and how terrible women are and how, much. There are certainly many forums, too, that are called that are men's rights activists, and pickup artists is another kind of thing where men feel that women will not sleep with them in the way that they would like, so they advise each other on ways to to fool women and to lie to them in order to get them to be with them. There are forms where it's tremendous disrespect and hatred and absolutely misogyny toward women, and the men kind of foment each other.
Right. So would it be fair to say that these are forums, in a sense, for misogynists, although I'm sure they don't call themselves that,
yeah.
And then trolling and even gender trolling, in a sense, is a result or very naturally springs out of the kind of conversations that occur there?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of the men's rage is condensed in these forums, is fomented. One man in particular, Elliot Roger, who was the man who shot the women in Santa Barbara, California, in May of 2014, he killed 6 people and injured 14 in that attack. He was a member of one of these forums and had posted a lot of resentment against women for not wanting to go out with him, for not being interested in him, and that was the reason that he gave in his YouTube video as to why he was out to kill. He meant to kill women, but he ended up killing women and men because he was outraged that, you know, he felt that somehow women owed him a date.
We're speaking with Carla Mantilla, and she has written a really interesting and frankly disturbing book called Gender Trolling: How Misogyny Went Viral. In it, she explores what she likes to call gender trolling. It is the most serious kind of harassment of women that occurs on the internet. And it is staggering the length to which some people will go to inflict misery on women, and in many cases, women that they do not even know. Ahead of us, kind of taking a little bit of this apart, I wonder if you could say a word about how widespread a phenomenon this is, and is it even possible for us to know how many women are targeted with gender trolling?
So I would say it's not possible to know because many, many women react by simply signing off, leaving the internet. Most recently, Jessica Valenti, a writer and activist, whose 5-year-old daughter people were issuing rape and death threats about her 5-year-old daughter. And she has been gender trolled for years and years and years and put up with it. But at that point, she's like, I'm out. And she quit the internet. Also, that happened with Robin Williams' daughter, who was also trolled after his death. So it's hard to know how many. But when I was researching this book, I was just astonished. I just happened to know a few women to whom this had happened. As I researched it, it just seemed like it was, well, I've certainly recounted the stories of hundreds of women in my book. And it's just shocking the extent to which it is happening. It does tend to happen to women who are a little more prominent. And, for example, the woman who's the Time editor for Europe, Catherine Mayer, was gender trolled quite significantly. So it's women who aren't even trying to, you know, they're not trying to be out there being super feminist activists, not that that deserves gender trolling, of course. But one woman was a food blogger. She was just blogging about food she prepared. And she got extremely trolled and threats to her children as well as to herself. So it is hard to know, but I certainly, without really trying, came across hundreds of incidents.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, are we talking about people being gender trolled in which there is scant personal relationship at all? I mean, where in a sense the person is a complete stranger, but, a celebrity, so to speak. Or does gender trolling also often happen between, for instance, an aggrieved ex-husband or an aggrieved ex-boyfriend or a jealous colleague at work? I mean, do we have a sense of how often the one occurs versus the other?
So I'm sure that it does happen where aggrieved ex-boyfriends, spouses, or colleagues could harass women. But what I'm talking about is actually the kind of harassment that takes many, many people to precipitate, to perpetuate. It takes a coordinated effort where they do coordinate. So, and every case that I delineate in my book is strangers. These women were completely bowled over. They had no idea this was coming. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is I think that this is happening to women. And when it happens, they're shocked and horrified and just as though, how could this happen? And I would like women to be aware that this can, so that when it does, if, and I hope it doesn't, but if it does happen, the women realize, okay, this is not about me personally. This is just these sick or men with significant problems doing this. And so they're not quite as horrified or taken aback. I mean, it's pretty horrific, though.
Right.
The kinds of messages that are sent. I mean, I quote them in my book, and I was loath to do so, but I feel that until you see exactly the kinds of things they say, it's pretty hard to understand the level of venom and hate that is leveled at these women. And the other significant thing is how long this goes on. I mean, it can be, like I say, some women get, you know, I've heard of 50 messages per hour across various media, and this is for years.
Mm.
So even fairly determined, strong women can get quite worn down over time.
Right. When I asked you about the extent of it, I was really asking, and you answered about, you know, how many women are the target of this. Do we have much of a sense of how many men out there are doing this? Because I suppose that's something else that to some extent is tricky to determine, and yet there are also certain markers on the internet, even with anonymity, where one can at least have a good guess of, is this torrent of harassment coming from 5 guys or 50 guys or 500 guys? I mean, do we have a sense of how many people out there, how many men are engaged in this?
So I asked a lot of the women I interviewed how many men they felt or it appeared to them were involved. Many of them mentioned that they were sure it was thousands because of comments on, for example, one woman had YouTube videos, and the comment, she said that there were at least thousands of unique IP addresses, which are, you know, identifiers to people who are on the Internet. Each computer has its own IP address. So it's certainly numbers in the thousands. It's again, because it's the Internet and because of anonymity, there's no way to get an accurate assessment of numbers.
Mm. How were you able to connect with all these women with whom you spoke and whose stories you chronicled?
Well, I interviewed quite a few. Many did not want to keep talking about it. So, but there's just numerous. There's articles. There's all people have written things. It didn't take me very long to, you know, read more than I could read in a lifetime about these women's experiences. So I do cite a lot of women's, and that's in the book is full of individual women's experiences because I really feel like that helps communicate better what it's like for these women. I also communicate a lot, write a lot about how they reacted and what it did to them personally in terms of, you know, extreme anxiety, panic attacks, depression, problems in, you know, and many women were, there were many, many women who moved because of the fear that someone would attack them based on credible threats where men would say, I'm going to come rape you at your house at 10 a.m. on Thursday, and here's your address.
Mm.
Very frightening.
Yeah.
And you just never know, is this a crazy person or not?
Right.
And there have been real-life encounters as well, so you just don't know.
And that's part of what makes it so despicable. I mean, on top of just the awfulness of the attack itself is also the terrible uncertainty with which people are forced to live then, wondering what terrible thing is next or to what level might this escalate. There are all kinds of, as you say, specific stories told in the book with women you name. Of a number that struck me, one of the stories I think that haunts me quite a lot is the story of Lindy West.
Yeah.
Could you, for instance, for our listeners, give them a sense of what Lindy West experienced?
So Lindy West is a writer and activist, and she had just gone on to a show to talk about a rape joke that was made, and a comedian had made this rape joke, Tosh 2.0 or whatever his name is. Anyway, she had gone on a show to discuss it, and after that she received just torrents of abuse, pornography, threats, harassment for months, and it was, again, crossing all media. They went after her. Somebody actually found out that her father had recently passed away and pretended to be, create a Twitter account in her deceased father's name and then started harassing her on Twitter saying how her father, ostensibly, you know, this person who was pretending to be her father, was so disappointed in her and just shamed her. And again, I'm making it mild. The language is shocking. And, you know, I'm not a person who's easily shocked, and yet it was really shocking. What was really remarkable about Lindy West is she chose to, rather, I mean, of course, it affected her deeply, but she chose to go very, like, to kind of turn into the skid and put this stuff out there. She created a video of herself just reading many of the tweets and messages she had been sent, and it's horrific to listen to these comments that have been sent to her. And then after that, she was featured on the popular podcast This American Life, detailing her story about her encounter with the very troll who had pretended to be her father. It's a very powerful podcast. I can't recommend it enough. It's called If You Can't Say Something Nice, Say It in All Caps. So this gives me the chance to talk about many of these women have been faced with years of harassment at terrific personal cost and yet have continued to be active and to talk about it and to be out there and to defend themselves and other women in ways that are quite brave. Another woman, a blogger, Chelsea Woolley, created a video called That's Just Mean, where she had young men come and read tweets and messages that had been sent to her and other women and filmed them. The men, these were just regular, not gender trolls, regular, decent men, who were just horrified and could barely get through reading them. They just, you could see the emotion on their face. And I think that was very powerful in helping to make real the experiences of a woman who is who gets to read these things coming into her inbox, all her different inboxes, on a daily basis.
Hmm. You mentioned the fact that one of the hallmarks of gender trolling is that it's not just one's disgruntled ex-husband harassing his ex-wife, although that can certainly be terrible and significant and should not be allowed to happen. But we are talking in gender trolling about not only persistent attacks, but that are coordinated among many attackers. Can you just say a word about how that coordination occurs? And is it coordination that is, in a sense, sort of above board? I mean, do people just come right out and that is the attackers? Do they talk about it in those terms? Or is this more of, in a sense, kind of a mindless swarm of, you know, locusts to a field of corn where you know, they see this occurring and they just join in? Is it more that kind of phenomenon? Or is it really, in a sense, a more premeditated kind of coordination that's occurring here?
Well, it's definitely informal. It's not like there's a, you know, formal structure for it. I do think that on many of these sites, they foment the opinion of men and foster them and kind of rile them up. One of the people who was key in gender trolling, Leslie Jones, Mianopoulos, and he was actually recently given a lifetime ban from Twitter, which I applaud. But he was wrote for Breitbart because of his, and he was recruited by them because of his role in flaming and fomenting Gamergate. So he's one of those who just sees something, gets outraged, and tries to get other people to be outraged as well. I think that they do coordinate some of the attacks, like they say, I'll go find her address, or I'll go do this, or someone needs, or does anyone live near her who could see, who could follow her and see what she's wearing and post that, or so that kind of things happens. The other thing that's important to think about is among any group of people, when you're fomenting that kind of hate and outrage and sense of aggrieved entitlement, there are people who are, you know, maybe not as mentally stable as others who can take that too far. And that is a serious concern that these women have. And it, you know, that kind of concern affects their lives dramatically. I mean, it's hard for them to continue living a normal life after this happens.
Mm. We're speaking with Carla Mantilla about her book, Gender Trolling, How Misogyny Went Viral. One of the central points of your book, beyond all that you do to help us understand just what in fact is happening and what it is like to be the target of this kind of sick attack, beyond that, you are also really anxious for us not to think of this as an entirely new phenomenon. Which is tempting to do because, of course, it's something happening on the internet. And so in terms of the specifics or the means by which this is carried out, this is something that could not have happened even 30 years ago or 40 years ago. let alone 100 or 200 years ago. And yet, you think it's very important that we understand gender trolling in a wider historical context. My first question is, what is the harm of thinking of it as kind of a newfangled thing happening in this newfangled world? What is the harm of thinking about it in those terms?
That's an excellent question. I certainly thought about that myself because people do think of it that way. One of the harms that I see of that is that it's kind of like a multi-headed hydra or a game of whack-a-mole, where if you whack one thing, it comes up somewhere else. So if we think about this as, oh, gender trolling is terrible, which of course it is, and then we try to stomp that out, it will come up in another way, since I believe it's based on misogyny. And we need to really kind of think about and talk about as a culture. And I think it would be great to be more shaming of misogyny so that it's less, you know, men and women talk about how it's not okay in general ways. Because, you know, it used to be different. You know, women couldn't vote. Women could not speak in public hundreds of years ago. Now women are more out in public, but they face, for example, street harassment when they're walking in public, gender trolling when they're in the public venue of the Internet. So if you see it that way, you can kind of see that we need to tackle the root of it, which is misogyny, as well as, of course, I believe that we need to try to do things to tackle the specific phenomenon, including changing certain laws and enforcing existing laws. But generally, I think that it's a sign of something that is in our culture that it would be great to work on as a culture.
Hmm. One of the most interesting portions of the book is when you talk about some of the different ways in which concerns about this tend to be deflected, or the seriousness of this somehow minimized. And I'm really glad that you take the time that you do to explore this, because I think most of us civilized human beings, as we first heard about this, can't imagine anybody constructing any argument that would even remotely make sense, you know, in terms of trying to minimize how terrible this is. And yet, there are some really interesting arguments that get raised one way or another that can have might eat away at our sense of outrage about this. Just spell out some of the most intriguing ways in which the danger and harm and evil of gender trolling can be minimized.
Well, I think this is an interesting thing because I've seen a lot of arguments come up when you try to talk about gender trolling that are similar to arguments that have come up to other phenomena that women have tried to raise, you know, date rape, stalking, sexual harassment in the workplace. So I see commonalities, and I think in a way when you start to see the commonalities among the arguments, they have less power. So one of the arguments common is to shoot the messenger. It's something about the woman herself that brought this on. So, you know, if she wasn't so fat, if she wasn't such a outspoken B-word, if she wasn't this, if she wasn't that, she brought it on. And that has been talked about in terms of rape, in terms of sexual harassment in the workplace. For example, Anita Hill was seen as a vindictive, bitter old maid, a man-hater. So shooting the messenger is a very common mechanism that people use to not hear what's going on. Another one is to pretend that this is not a serious problem, that, oh, this is just a small minority. Another one is to accuse women, we all know, of being too sensitive. Yeah. But, of course, that's one of the reasons I include the horrific quotes that I do in the book, so you can see that these women are not being sensitive. These things are horrific, kind of beyond comprehension. Blaming the victim. Another one is both sides are doing it. So, you know, well, the women, if they ever defend themselves, then they're complicit in many people's minds. We tend to be sympathetic to the poor perpetrators. Maybe they're having a rough day, maybe their life is tough, which may be true, but it's still no excuse to be abusive, harassing, and threatening.
Hmm.
So there's a whole lot of, and then one of the ones, too, is the inevitability. You know, the boys will be boys. This is just going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. And that's an easy out. And we could say that about murder, and we don't. We make murder illegal. Murder has always happened, but it doesn't mean that we don't strongly object to it, and we don't say, oh, well, people are just going to murder. You know, we don't want to normalize and accept things that are unacceptable.
Right. That brings to mind some of what you outline in terms of the arguments for the internet needing to be natural, that it is a natural phenomenon in some respects, and in that respect should be free and unrestricted. And,
yes,
of course, you take serious issue with that notion.
Well, I mean, it's part of the idea that free speech should be completely, you know, absolute. And the truth is, free speech is not absolute, even, you know, in all kinds of speech. You can't, as we know, shout fire in a crowded theater. You can't actually make a credible death threat against someone else. It's illegal for me to threaten to harm another person and in a way that's, you know, credible. There's all kinds of things. You can't slander, you can't libel. So speech, we have to be responsible with it. Obviously, free speech is an incredibly important facet of our culture, and I believe it should remain so. But it doesn't mean that speech should be used to terrorize. And the irony here is that the kinds of speech that are used on the internet are used to quell women's speech. So if you're an advocate for free speech, threatening bodily harm or threatening to harm someone else is a way of silencing them. So I don't believe that those people are really in favor of free speech if they're silencing other speech.
I think you've made brief mention of this argument as well already in the interview, but I think it's worth briefly revisiting the notion of the internet being its own separate world, and a world that perhaps people should just leave if need be. And I mean, I think you've already persuasively made the case that it is unthinkable for the typical professional woman to simply leave the internet altogether. It's all but impossible. But I think that very argument also maybe helps us understand the mindset of the sick men who engage in this. That they feel like they're doing it. It's as though they're caught in the game of Tron. You know, from that movie. I mean, that this is like I'm inside a Pac-Man machine or whatever, and doing this, and it doesn't have anything to do with the real world. I don't know that they literally think that, but it almost seems like that.
Yeah, I do think people think that the internet is kind of, you know, free game where anything goes, and I mean, it is great. It's wonderful. All kinds of people express their opinions, but there are still people behind the screen, and it's important to remember that. The other thing is, it's very, again, to think of this, it's similar to other kinds of things that have happened to women. When you think about street harassment, many people have said, I don't think they say it now, but it used to be the idea, if you don't feel comfortable, don't go out. Or, you know, if you're afraid of rape, don't leave your house. So there's these ways in which women are faced with the choice of, if you're being harassed viciously in the public sphere, whether in the street or on the internet, it's incumbent upon the women to leave. And that precludes women from exercising their freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom to keep jobs, freedom to all kinds of things. It's not fair to ask women to simply opt out of public venues in our lives.
So the last part of the book is where you explore what you feel are some viable means by which we can do something about this. And, of course, chief among them, trying to attack some of these misogynistic attitudes that generate all this in the first place. Beyond that, you also talk about some specific things that really need to happen, both in internet providers and in the realms of law enforcement and so on. Talk about maybe several of the means by which this can be perhaps curbed or at least discouraged to some extent.
So I do think that online service providers and social media companies do need to take this more seriously, and I believe that they are moving in that direction, especially Twitter's recent lifetime ban of Yiannopoulos, who was one of the harassers of Leslie Jones. Facebook is also working on that. However, those companies do need to increase the staff that they have to handle abuse and harassment, and it also there's calls to diversify their workforce so they can kind of be sure that they're adequately representing the groups that are being targeted. Other kinds of laws that could be changed would be, it's been suggested to make cyber harassment a federal crime. I mean, that is a definitional problem. I'm not a lawyer, so I leave that up to them. Many people have talked about a certain section of the Communications Decency Act. That would be great if we had what's called a notice and takedown remedy so that people could go to court and ask that Internet people who are forum holders could take down abusive and harassing content within a reasonable time period. One of the key things that I think is important is law enforcement needs to have some training on this, because credible threats are illegal, and they're already illegal. And what is happening is that women are reporting these very credible threats to law enforcement, and law enforcement is not taking them seriously. So I think that training would be important, both for them to understand the online world, because many police officers come and they're like, I don't know what an IP address is, I don't know what Twitter is. So I think more and more training would be good. And also the idea that a credible threat is a credible threat, whether online or in person. But finally, I do think that cultural change is really important in the sense, and that's what I'm aiming to in this book, is to raise awareness so that we can, as a group, kind of shame, name and shame this kind of behavior and these harassers, so that they don't get any kind of cultural cachet, so that instead it's a shameful thing to be causing this kind of anguish and pain and frankly, terror to many, many women, so that we all are looking at it and saying, you guys are big losers.
I get the sense that you had little, if any, direct personal contact with any such men, that the focus of your work was, in terms of interviews, was with women who have been victims, and which certainly makes perfect sense. Did you reach out or make any attempts to have some meaningful dialogue with men who find themselves, for whatever sick reason, to be engaged in this activity?
I did not, but I think if people are interested in that, I would turn them back to that This American Life podcast episode. If you have, if you can't say anything nice, say it in all caps, because in that episode they do talk extensively with a man who was particularly vicious toward Lindy West. And it was really interesting and revealing. And he is revealed to be, you know, was a troubled human being who actually at this point regrets his actions. So I find that was a very illuminating episode, and I encourage people to listen to that.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you have taken such care with this really, really important issue and brought it still more attention. And that gives us at least some hope that something really meaningful can be done to curb this kind of activity on the Internet. The book, again, is called Gender Trolling, How Misogyny Went Viral. And the author of it is Carla Mantilla. The book is published by Prager. Carla Mantilla, I thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show. Best wishes to you.
I thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about this important topic.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Kate Otzval will join us. She is the new executive director of Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services. On Thursday, we mark the 50th anniversary to the day of the network premiere of Star Trek. That is the original series, the 50th anniversary. And I'm thrilled to be able to present to you a conversation which I was able to record with Dorothy Fontana, who was, she is one of the only original creators of Star Trek who is still alive. And DC Fontana was responsible for writing some of the most important episodes from the series, served as the story editor for the series for a time, was a secretary to Gene Roddenberry. She was right there as this groundbreaking series was created. You can hear my conversation with her on Thursday. And on Friday, Nan Calvert will be joining us for her monthly visit to The Morning Show. Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient.